on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How are you? We're back for another episode of the YokeCast podcast. Hard to believe, but it's the final game of the regular season for South Dakota. Hopefully not the last football game of the year. But time will tell. We'll see what happens on Saturday. So if you're wondering about the playoff talk and conversation, pretty simple. Win, South Dakota's in. Lose, and you probably need some help, and you got to sit around and wait a week for Selection Sunday to see what happens. Who knows? Maybe the Yotes are in regardless, but only one way to guarantee yourself a spot in the playoffs, and that is to go win a football game on Saturday in Carbondale, Illinois. Coming up in the show, we will preview the Salukis with Luke Martin. He's the radio play-by-play voice of Southern Illinois. But first, let's have a conversation with Tristan Simpson back at South Dakota after a great playing career and now as an assistant coach at USD.
Tristan, the season off and rolling. Obviously very young in the season in week number two, but what's been your assessment so far this year?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, not the start we wanted to the year. Obviously, we'd like to get a few of those wins, but, I'm proud of our guys. Like, we're getting better. To have that tough turnaround, quick game on Monday, and then play again on Wednesday, but not a whole lot of prep. But as coaches, we really challenged our guys, and they responded, and we got better, and we did what we were supposed to do against Ozark. So now we just got to keep ascending right and keep getting better every day.
You, of course, had a great playing career at the University of South Dakota, and It wasn't that long ago. I'm sure It feels further and further away, but Does it feel surreal being on the bench here?
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy feeling, and that's funny you say that. Some of our guys, like Shea, was just in there saying, "Oh, you played here like 20 years ago," but it was like 5 or 6 years ago. So, best way to explain it is, I came back in June, and my first day back was helping with our camps in the summer, and I kind of just walked in the gym and looked around, and a bunch of memories came back, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. It's just a full circle moment. But Vermilion's a great place, and always will have hold a special place in my heart. Just the community and the administration, everyone's great, and I love Vermilion as well, and my girlfriend lives in Sioux Falls, so that helps as well. But yeah, it's good to be back.
Did you know when you were playing here that you wanted to maybe get into coaching, or when did you kind of get that itch and start thinking that could be a career?
Yeah, probably pretty early on than a lot of other players. Once I was a freshman and I came in and Craig Smith and Eric Peterson was on one of our assistant coaches here. They really trusted me with a lot, and when I was always the kind of coach on the floor, right? Just an extension of the head coach. And I had another time my senior year where I was injured for about 7 games, and I spent a lot of time with Brad Davidson, who was our offensive coordinator at the time, and our offensive coordinator at the time, and I was helping him call plays and stuff like that. But kind of just being that point guard position, and you're, like I said, you're an extension of the head coach, and you're kind of running the show when you're out there. So I always knew I wanted to coach. When I finished my playing career, I had a little bit of an itch. There was a little bit of a nasty taste there. So I wanted to play professional for a couple years. I never said I wanted to do it until I was 40. So I got over there. I had a good experiences. And, I've had some talks with some of my mentors, Coach G, who was here. I had a lot of talks with him that summer. And I was just kind of like, I'm enjoying it. Playing overseas, it was difficult being away from family and friends for 9 months out of the year and an 8-hour time change. And he was just like, if you're feeling that way, like, let's go ahead and get this thing started. So
what was that like playing overseas? And I know some people go over there for years and years and they have a great time and they enjoy it, and some people, I know there's different leagues and divisions and different areas, and some are better than others. Exactly. What was your experience like?
Yeah, so I started off in Iceland, which was a solid league, but it's kind of crazy. The European basketball scene is kind of coming into college now. So it's every year you're trying to make that step up. You know, no matter what you did in college, you always probably have to start at the bottom now, unless you were a power four player or you put up these crazy, amazing numbers. So you're always kind of trying to climb the ladder. And, you know, for me, I played for a team that was, I was like, okay, this is professional basketball. And I played for a team, it's like, I'm not sure if this is professional basketball. This is a little different. But I mean, overall, it was a great experience, obviously, to just keep playing the game and, you know, going to battle with your brothers and all that. But, you know, and it's difficult now. You know, you're thrown into an environment where now you're the outsider, right? Everybody speaks kind of their country's language, whenever that may be. And, you know, you speak English, and, you know, it could be difficult at times, but, you know, all the less you were being paid to play basketball. So it was enjoyable.
Yeah, not bad to get paid to play the game of basketball.
Yep.
Then it was time to start your coaching career. And you said you made that decision kind of early, maybe earlier than some other players.
Yep.
Was there a certain person or a certain situation that really click to you that coaching could be fun?
You know, this is actually funny, and I worked for Craig Smith last year at the University of Utah, and, you know, I told him when he was coaching me, like, I was kind of like, I want to be like that guy. Like, him and I have similar personalities, you know, extremely outgoing and fiery and all that stuff. So when I was playing for him, I was like, you know what, whenever I'm done playing, I'll go play, and but I want to be like that. So, you know, he played a huge role in that, and, you know, some of our assistants that we had, when it came down to it, I was talking to Coach G the most at the time, but he set me up with a good spot for my first coaching deal.
Talk about that, the breaking into the coaching world.
Yeah, so, you know, I was extremely fortunate. I started at Indian Hills Community College, which is one of the premier JUCOs, and it was great. I worked for Josh Sash, who is now an Iowa assistant, and he was awesome. He was very well understanding that it was my first year, and, you know, I would have some ups and downs, and, you know, I joke with him now. Like, I know there are sometimes he probably just wanted to tell me, just hang it up. Like, you're not helping us. But, you know, and he also did a very good job of teaching me what things are like on the coaching side. And, you know, we had a very successful year there, and went to the Final Four, and it was great. And for me, getting into coaching and starting in JUCO was awesome, because there's not a whole lot of resources in JUCO, so you got to wear a lot of hats. Like, I was player developing coach, I was an academic advisor, you know, mental health guy. Like, it was great. On top of doing scouts and, you know, really diving into what it takes to be a coach. It's a lot more than you would think.
There is a lot that goes into it, and I've always told people, you don't see what goes on behind the scenes for these guys, you know, bus trips on watching film as soon as it's over and late into the night and some of that.
Yep.
When was your realization moment of, wow, I didn't know this much went into it, maybe as a player, but holy cow.
Yeah. I would definitely say that first year at Indian Hills. I remember we had a jamboree down in Dallas, Texas, and we're in Ottumwa, Iowa, which is southeastern Iowa. And, you know, we're talking about the travel plans. I was also, you know, I played the Doughboy role there, so I was in charge of all our travel and food and all that stuff. And I remember our coach saying, we're driving down there. It's about a 12-hour drive, and I kind of just look at him like, okay, who's driving? He's like, the coaches. So that was the first time I was like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, I'm a coach now. But, you know, just being there and, you know, how much support you have to pour into the guys, and, you know, especially at that level, because, you know, you're trying to – you have these goals set as a team. But in the junior college level, these guys have 2 years to kind of make something happen. So really just stressing to them the importance of the team, and we have to do this all together. I would say that year for sure.
You get your start at Indian Hills. You've spent time on staffs in Nebraska and Utah.
Yep.
A little different basketball. What was the biggest difference for you going into Power Four conference type of basketball?
It's just, you know, to me, the biggest difference with Power Four is obviously just the size. Like, first thing when I walked into Nebraska, you know, it's you know, we had, at Indian Hills, we had a couple 6'10 bigs, but, you know, we went against a lot of schools that had 6'7, 6'8 bigs. And, you know, I get to Nebraska, we got 2 7-footers, and, you know, the guy handling the ball is 6'4. And, you know, that's, you know, at this level and at the junior college level, that might be your four man. So the biggest difference was the size to me, and obviously the much bigger coaching staffs. You know, being at Indian Hills and only having three guys, you, like I said, you wore a lot of hats and you had a lot to do, but at these higher levels, you could be a lot more time efficient with what you're trying to do.
You're a Lincoln guy. Yep. You were on the staff in Nebraska. South Dakota comes down to play. What was that like?
Yeah, that was a crazy feeling. you know, one of the Nebraska coaches told me before the game, like, I don't want to see no South Dakota socks on or South Dakota shirt underneath. But, you know, that was a tough one, especially with Coach Peterson being back here and, you know, my time with him. You know, I was kind of cheering for both sides a little bit there, I'm not going to lie. But it was awesome. And you know, when they came up there, I just remembered my freshman year with Craig Smith and Eric Peterson and going up there and playing. And it was a good feeling, though. I got to talk to all those guys, and yeah, you know, the Yotes came up there and battled.
Yep. No doubt. You were on at Utah when, obviously, you know, Craig Smith got relieved of duties there, and that happens in this sport. And, you know, I know a lot of people have a great deal of respect for Craig Smith and you yourself. Yep. What was that like for you, knowing that, obviously, when the head coach is asked to leave, that everybody's future is now in jeopardy?
Yes. It's nature of the business, right? You know, and when I made that move from Nebraska to Utah, in the back of my head, I knew that was a possibility, but you know, that just speaks to the relationship that I, and the respect that I have for Craig Smith. But yeah, it was a funky deal. We still had about four games left of conference play, and you know, it was coach gets let go, but we still have to continue, right? You know, you name the intern and all that, but there was a lot of uncertainty in my head, right? So you got to wait. We had to wait until they announced who the head coach was, and you know, now you're having conversations with the head coach, and it's like, hey, are you going to retain me? Like, am I gone? You know, but you know, I had a bunch of conversations with Craig and Eric, Coach Peterson, sorry, about that, and you know, it's just like, keep doing your job until they tell you not to do your job, right? So I was still showing up to work every day, and then you know, this went on. Sorry, let me backtrack here. We also did the crown after, so it dragged it on even longer, right? So leading up to the Final Four, where you know, where a lot of opportunities present themselves for coaching positions, you know, we're trying to figure that out. But on top of that, we're also trying to prepare for the crown tournament that we played in at Utah. So it was very hectic. But you know, obviously then a spot opened up here, and you know, I had plenty of conversations with Coach Peterson, and we got that done.
You know, you go through that, nobody ever wants to go through it, right? But I could see a benefit of you going through that young in your career as well. A great learning experience for you.
Yes, without a doubt. And another thing that is nice about it is this basketball world is all about connectivity and what connections you have, right? So, you know, within a year, I was at the University of Nebraska, I was at the University of Utah, and now I'm at the University of South Dakota. So I've met a lot of people and seen a lot of new faces. So that's kind of the bright side of it. And I got to meet those new coaches at Utah, and you know, I was just texting one a couple weeks ago about, you know, how they're feeling about the season starting up, so that was a plus about that situation.
You know, when you go through coaching, I don't know if you'd ever considered maybe one day you'd end up back at the University of South Dakota, especially after you'd explored Nebraska and Utah, places like that.
Yep.
What ultimately brought you back into this and the opportunity to coach here at the alma mater?
Yeah, obviously, you know, my time being here for 4 years as a student athlete, like I'm a true Yote through and through, right? So in the back of my head, like I always knew, you know, maybe it's a possibility, and if that ever came to be back at the University of South Dakota, like that's something that I would consider strongly. But honestly, the relationship I have with Coach Peterson and the ability to grow, right? Like at those other high major schools, I was more so in a GA role, or my title at Utah was special assistant. So I wasn't able to do everything that maybe the outside would think an assistant coach does, right? I wasn't able to be on the floor. I wasn't able to present scouts. I wasn't able to go out on the road and recruit. And in this role that I'm in here now at the University of South Dakota allows me to do that. So that I would say that was probably the biggest thing, is just continue to grow as a coach, and this opportunity allowed me to do that.
You know, with growth and responsibilities, you don't have as many responsibilities. You don't have to drive the bus anymore.
Yep.
You don't have to order the food,
yep,
anything like that.
Yep.
Maybe doing more of the things that you always wanted to do.
Yes.
What has been the biggest growth for you as a coach here in the last couple of years as you've gone to different places and everything?
Yep.
What do you feel like the biggest growth has been for you?
I think my biggest growth, which I'm still growing, right? Like, and I still got a long ways to go, but just probably being on the court with the guys and giving instruction and, like, how do I, you know, I feel like I've always had a good feel of talking to guys one-on-one, but now you're talking to four or five in a small group or eight, nine guys, you know? And, you know, obviously, you know, Coach Peterson, he's thrown me in the fire a little bit. Like, you got it. Take it. Like, figure it out, which has been awesome because, you know, it's all trial and error, you know. Maybe the first time I was doing it, like, the guys might have been looking at me like, does he know what he's talking about? But, like, I feel like I see myself getting better day by day with that stuff. And honestly, too, just the scouting side of it, like, you know, I was able to learn so much at those bigger schools because I was the guy behind the bench or ducked off in the office watching film so I could give it to the assistant coaches. So now I have a good idea how to attack that and, you know, make sure my scouting reports and all that are sharp.
Game one on the bench of the regular season, unfortunately a loss for the Yotes in overtime. Was there any moment where you were like, just give me the ball and go out there and finish this thing?
I think I might have said something to Coach Peterson in one of those timeouts, like, you know, now guys have 5 years and 6 years, like, come on, we can figure something out, just get me out there. But I wish that was possible.
So looking ahead now with this group, and obviously you've been with this team and it's a long season. You know,
yes,
how that goes,
yes,
right? Everybody wants to win and win now, but it's a long season and ultimately trying to get better for the conference season.
Yep.
What do you like about this group right now, and what do you want to see improve for this team to be playing its best in late February, early March?
Yep. The one thing that I will say about this group that I've admired about them since I got here in June was the competitive spirit. Like, we have in a competitive group and we're in a competitive business, so if you want to win, you got to have that kind of edge to you. Where was I going with that? What was the question again? Sorry.
Nope. It was things that you like right now about the group and things to improve on.
Okay. Yeah. So I love our competitive edge. Honestly, we have a lot of things we need to improve on. Offensively and defensively. Defensively, I feel like we've been pretty sharp. Offensively, it's just spacing and about taking that right shot, taking the best shot that we can get, and creating that advantage offensively and keeping that advantage. And there will be growing pains. We do have a young group. We have a lot of new faces. You know, we got some guys with some experience, but we have a lot of guys that don't have experience. So those things will come. We just got to keep improving every single day. And like I said, from Utah Tech to today, we've gotten better, in my opinion. So it's there's a lot of teaching points, and, you know, the coaches, you know, Coach Peterson has been on, the assistants, like, we really have to coach these guys. So we will get better, and we will come along, and, you know, some of those offensive problems or issues that we're having, they will get better.
All right, we're looking forward to it. Tristan, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Yes.
Enjoy it. I know a lot of people are excited to see you back in the Kyle bench.
Yes, and I'm excited to be back as well. Go Yotes.
That is Tristan Simpson back at South Dakota. Of course, he had a great playing career at USD from 2016 to 2020, where he scored more than 1,000 points in his career. He also finished in the top 10 at number 9 with 392 career assists. Now trying to assist the coaching staff and this team and help it build to a Summit League champion. So great conversation with Tristan Simpson. Glad to have him back at the University of South Dakota. It's a big one Saturday in Carbondale, Illinois. Both teams need a win. South Dakota, one win secures a spot into the playoffs. Southern Illinois needs a win to keep its playoff hopes alive. It should be a fun one on Saturday afternoon at Saluki Stadium. I caught up with Luke Martin. He's the radio play-by-play voice of Southern Illinois to talk Saluki football. Luke, back at it for another week this week. Obviously, two games left in the regular season for just about everybody. It's kind of weird for us looking at this as just one game left in the regular season and then see if you get another opportunity. But you look back at the season, Saluki's dropped a tough one last week, being outscored, had a good lead, gave up a tough third quarter in that one. How would you kind of look at the season for Southern Illinois? It's been a year in which they've competed against some of the really good teams for a while, and then maybe it's gotten away in the second half in some of those. But how would you kind of assess what this season has been?
Yeah, John, always great to be with you, man. Looking forward to see you and everybody this weekend in Carbondale. It's been a unique year. You know, when you looked at the schedule and how it was going to play out, you had your non-D1 to start off the year, which, you know, as we were talking about before we were recording, that could play a major factor with things yet to come. But Saluki's got a lot of work to do for that to even be in the forefront. But then you had three straight road games at Purdue, at UT Martin, and at SEMO, which is the rivalry game for SIU and their non-con. And typically you're going, man, that is a gauntlet. And even at the time as you're going through it, John, you feel like it is a gauntlet. Unfortunately, SEMO and UT Martin up to the typical standards that they have been. So those are really, none of them were like marquee wins. So then you get into the league, you beat Indiana State to start off, you feel really good about yourself, but you know the ultimate test is going to be in Fargo when you go to the Fargo Dome. And for the first 28 minutes of that game, SIU was really fighting NDSU toe-to-toe. They had the football near NDSU's red zone, having a chance to go up to take the lead in the halftime. DJ Williams fumbles. And from that point on, it's almost like the season in those big games haven't quite gotten Southern's way. The next week, the North Dakota game was not even as close as the final score said. North Dakota just jumped out on Southern and beat Southern quickly from the jump. That game was not as competitive as it should have been. And then you look at the other games, then you beat Northern Iowa, you beat Murray State. It's been a year, John, where Southern has kind of beaten everybody they're supposed to beat and beat them convincingly. It's been those seesaw games, the games that are ultimately going to get you into the FCS postseason. Those haven't gone Southern's way. And even though last year, all the injuries, we don't have to rehash all of that because that gave me trauma, John. But it's, you know, it's nine straight losses to ranked teams now for SIU. And they haven't beaten a ranked team in November since that playoff game in the Dakota Dome back in 21. So, like, they're not only trying to get a signature win, they're trying to beat a good team at the time of year you really need to win those games.
You know, about a month ago, South Dakota kind of put itself in a position where they needed to win, backs against the wall type of thing. That's what it feels like for Southern, a little desperation here in their final two games of the regular season.
Well, better be, John. I mean, we talked about it internally with our Saluki radio crew, Mike Trude and Pat Porov. Even going in the last week, it felt like Southern was, if you win at Youngstown State, and saying, hey, if you only win at Youngstown State, beat South Dakota at home, who's coming off wins of North Dakota and now SDSU, and then go on the road and beat the Redbirds. Man, that's easy. Just do that. Just win your last three. I mean, that's really hard to do. But if you do that, you would not have any reason to sweat. As I kind of alluded to you in my first answer to you, John, I think regardless of what happens for the Salukis, I think they're not going to win convincingly this weekend. But even if they won convincingly in their two games left, they're going to be sweating on Selection Sunday because of that non-D1 win. And look, sometimes you need those type of games because within the Missouri Valley Football Conference, you're going to get tons of opportunities. And it's okay to have those games when you are not on the cutting line and when you aren't on the bubble. When you are on the bubble and you put yourself on the bubble, and the Salukis have, there's no one else that put them on the bubble other than them and their performance, that is going to be a blemish. But as we all know, and the benefit of it's the same thing with the Coyotes, they've had to battle back from some early stumbles. This league allows you to get back up because of the great competition, and that's exactly what SIU has starting this weekend with South Dakota.
Oh, and you look at SIU, it's no secret. Their offense runs through DJ Williams. Phenomenal athlete, phenomenal player. Got hurt last year, missed the bulk of the season. Coyotes haven't played him since he played for Murray State, of course, a couple of years ago. But a guy right now completing about 64% of his passes. He's the leading rusher on this team. It's a tremendous athlete.
Yeah, and he's an even better person. I mean, DJ is everything you want, a leader of your football team, and he is playing through a lot right now, John. I mean, if you watch him play, you can tell he's not where he was early on in the season. If you watch a lot of those early season games, you see so much burst, you see so much speed, especially he's still able to run the ball. But you can tell a lot of those hits have accumulated for him. Yet he is still out there physically pushing through because he knows how important he is to this team. And it's not that Southern would have absolutely no faith in Jake Curry, who is their backup. The Coyotes did not see Jake Curry last year. They saw Hunter Simmons, who's now at Wisconsin. But they know DJ is the straw that stirs the drink for Southern Illinois. And his passing ability has really gotten better this year, John. I think that's the difference with DJ is he has become much more of a threat with his arm. And Southern's really needed him to because they need him and they need to protect him. And man, that dude just takes so much of the contact on. But that's what you embrace when you're a quarterback, and especially a quarterback the caliber of DJ.
When you look at this offense, obviously it has scored some points this year. We mentioned DJ Williams. What else makes this offense go?
Well, it's been there. Surprisingly, has been much better this year, led by a veteran offensive line. Last week, they had to rotate some new guys in. Aiden Logan was out at the left guard spot, so Jacob Katowskis got in there. Blaine Howley, he's been in since Coleon Smith went down earlier in the season with an injury. But you look up front, the majority of those guys have played in so many football games, John, especially Noah Finsky, and like it feels like his 15th year of college football. But Noah's been the key at that center position, along with Derek Harden, who's been back and healthy this year, and Cam Dye. Those guys virtually started most of the games a year ago. Besides Derek, he was hurt virtually all of last year and has come back. Those guys mixed in with Chandler Chapman and Eddie Robinson, they've gotten better each week. Everyone focuses on DJ and their Ryan attack. And typically, Southern does so much of the screen game versus just traditionally handed off to a tailback. I think those guys have really improved. And then on the outside, Vincent Davis has been relatively quiet. He had a touchdown last week against Youngstown State. That was his first touchdown since all the way back against Indiana State in the Valley opener. But he's a dude that's got so much big play potential, a small, strong slot receiver that is just wicked fast. So there's been plenty of weapons around DJ. So as DJ goes, yes, Southern's offense can go, but it's not like all the time he's got to put on that Superman cape and be the answer every time. He's got really good weapons around him.
You look at the Southern defense, and easy to see that they have given up some points this season. What has been the struggle for them, and when they have had some challenges and given up points?
I think the biggest issue this year, John, and honestly it's for this Saluki team as a whole, it's been just playing complimentary football. That's a phrase that gets used a lot. I think sometimes fans roll their eyes and just think it's such a coaching cliche. But I think there's not a better number. I meant to actually look it up before I talk to you. But if you look at points off turnovers just in Valley play, which that's not always the greatest indicator for complimentary football, but also shows you, okay, if the opposing team turns it over, can your offense make them pay? Vice versa. When you turn it over, whether it's in a short field, can you answer? Can your defense get a stop? Southern has been outscored on points off turnovers in league play this year, John, by 40-plus points. They've yet to score a touchdown off of any of their opposing team's turnovers within Valley play this year. That exemplifies it to a T. I think the Saluki defense at times can play really well. Example, in the Fargo Dome, Bryce Lance goes like 75 yards the first play. I think the next two drives they force punts. They're right there in the thick of the game. And then with a turnover happens by DJ, NDSU is able to move the football. That has been the issue. And, man, the rushing defense has just been really a struggle this year, John. And that's where if I'm a Coyote fan looking at this weekend, that's where you lick your chops a little bit because there's no secret. That's what USD wants to do. That's what USD does really well. And Southern's defense has not shown it consistently enough to be able to stop the run, really outside of a very rainy day in Murray.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how things play out. I can't decide if we're in for a shootout on Saturday or if we're in for a 2 years ago replica, a goal line stand by South Dakota that found a way to survive a 14-7 slugfest, if you will, in that one. But we've seen some really good games between these two teams, and Luke, I would expect nothing less on Saturday. If the Salukis are going to win and keep their hopes alive for another week, what goes well?
I don't think it's any secret, John. I mean, by now, at this point in the year, when South Dakota's in the last game of their regular season, Southern's still got one game to go. There's plenty of data to see what you have to do to win games. And for Southern to win, they have to score. And when I say score, they have to score probably in the 30s to have a chance to win this game, just because that's just how they're built this year. I would love to think that Saturday could be a day where the Salukis could really make Aiden Bauman and the offense struggle, but it just hasn't happened consistent enough. And it looks like it's going to be a gorgeous weather day, too. It's going to be in the low 70s and sunny, which is like, man, it was like mid-30s and cold early this week. It's like, where the heck is this weather going this time of year? But it should be a beautiful day. Should be a nice, warm Saturday in November. Don't get that to say that very often this time of year. But for the Salukis to win, the offense has to score. And I think they have to be able to match South Dakota score for score. And if not, even like Youngstown State, they're up 24-7. You feel like you're in a good spot, but you know that Bo Brungard and that offense is going to keep scoring, and you have to match it. And if it's got to be, 40-plus points, it's got to be 40-plus. But I think for the Salukis to win on Saturday, and if they do win, it's going to be DJ and the offense. They are able to move the football well. We're able to match score for score. But, man, that's going to be hard to do against a Coyote defense that really, I don't want to say has been, you know, under the radar, John, because I don't think that's fair either. But let's just say it's not easy to put up that amount of points on South Dakota. And but, I mean, the only team this year, the only two teams that have been able to do it are NDSU and Iowa State.
We'll see what happens. Should be a fun one. Luke, always appreciate your time, man, very much, and can't wait to see you this weekend.
Absolutely, John. Looking forward to seeing you, brother. It'll be a fun one.
That is Luke Martin. He is the play-by-play voice of the Southern Illinois Salukis as we get ready for kickoff on Saturday. Of course, kickoff set for 12 o'clock Central Time. Our pregame show gets underway at 11 a.m. on Saturday. So we will get that done, get home, and hopefully have a week off before a playoff run. But again, we'll see how things unfold. The only way to secure a spot in the playoffs, of course, is to get a victory. Before we wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. On Friday, the cross-country team will compete at the Midwest Regional Championships. Those are being run in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Then on Saturday, volleyball and football start at the same time. Volleyball is against Oral Roberts in Tulsa, Oklahoma at noon. Football takes on Southern Illinois in Carbondale also at noon. Sunday, we've got two basketball games, one at home, one on the road. The Coyote men's basketball team will host Western Michigan at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Women's basketball will take on Idaho State at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon in Pocatello. That is what is going on. And then next Tuesday, the Coyote volleyball team will wrap up their regular season when they host North Dakota State in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. To keep up with schedules, tickets, and more, go to goyotes.com. That's it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. As always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.